Hi everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the Life Actually Book Club, the second episode of The Mountain Is You. We are on to chapter one. I was just having a flick through the rest of the chapters, and I was like, I even wrote it in my buddy diary, like my brand new, perfect, not yet scribbled on or anything, no mistakes diary planner thing for 2024. I wrote in on like the January overview the days of the episodes were going to be released, and I was like, part one will be this day, which it was. Part one or part two will be Friday the 5th, which it is, blah 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 blah. And I did like 8 parts plus the finale, and then I was looking through the book half an hour ago and I realized that chapter two is like 1,000 pages. It's not really, it's 50 though. Like 50 pages is a lot for a chapter, especially when there's so much information in there. So although I said in the last episode that we'll probably do like 8 episodes and a review, it might actually be more than that. So it might be like, I don't know, 10 or 12, but it'll still finish before the end of Jan or on the end of January. I hope that you're enjoying the book so far and that you've enjoyed chapter one. I actually really love this chapter. I've read it between a combination of before I go to bed at night, in the sauna, in the gym, which I don't think was the best idea because I felt a bit like a dick sitting there with my pen and some sticky notes, like, or well, my pencil more than a pen. You know, the details matter, but some sticky notes, like in the sauna, literally scribbling on the book. I felt like, I don't know, I probably overthinking it, but last night I was sitting there writing my little notes and I was like, are people looking at me thinking she's so obnoxious scribbling in this book with loads of post-its and sticky notes and everything else and like sticky note tabs in the sauna on a Thursday or on a Wednesday night? Probably overthinking that, but I've committed, I stuck to it, I'm really enjoying it, and I've written so many notes and so many post-its and so many everything else throughout this chapter, which was like 17 pages. So I imagine the next chapter is definitely going to require more than one episode. It's kind of funny and synchronistic actually, because last night in the gym pre-sauna, I went after work and I put my bag like down on the bench, just getting my stuff out, and The Mountain Is You was on top. So I sat on the bench and this girl beside me was like, oh, this has been on my like saved list to read for ages. Is it any good? And I was like, yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far. And I was going to say that I had a book club, but I didn't. And I should have plugged myself, because 2024 is meant to be the year of big moves. So next time I'm going to fucking say it. But anyway, that was fine. Then went to the gym, came back, was getting changed for the sauna, and The Mountain Is You was like sat on the bench. And I was like, did I leave my copy out? Like, what? Like literally right outside my locker, It's like, did I just leave this here? I thought I put it away. And then I realized it didn't have any post-it notes. So I was like, has somebody just removed the post-it notes? So, like, what's going on? So I like picked it up and was flicking through it. And I realized that it actually had no notes at all. And somebody else had left their copy of The Mountain Is You right outside my locker. I thought that was so funny. It's actually not that like laughy funny, but it's quite synchronistic. Bit of a sign from the universe in some way or another. And I thought I'd mention it today. Everybody is out for 2024 to be the year of no more self-sabotage and moving forward, it seems, but we're here for that too, so it's all good. Okay, getting into chapter one. I highlighted the very first line. It says, there is nothing holding you back in life more than yourself. If there is an ongoing gap between where you are and where you want to be, and your efforts to close it are consistently met with your own resistance, pain, and discomfort, self-sabotage is almost always at work. It appears to be a product of self-hatred, low confidence, or a lack of willpower. In reality, self-sabotage is simply the presence of an unconscious need that is being fulfilled by self-sabotaging behavior. So I said at the end of the last episode, which was like 2 days ago, have a look at what your own self-sabotaging behaviors are and what they could be covering up. So I give some examples of my own and I'll give them again, like not writing things down. I've got a bit of a sieve brain, which I'm really trying to focus on this year. I talk myself out of things, like for example, the book club. Like that was like the universe gave me a perfect opportunity to like plug and promote my book club, which would have been a really like forward thing to do and would have been really great. And also like I go to quite a bougie gym, so to put that, like my book club, into other women in those circles that probably have more money and influence than me, it's like, oh, who could she talk to? Because loads of people have like famous friends and stuff. Like, you know, it could have been a really great opportunity and I didn't say anything. So I feel like I self-sabotaged myself there, because I kind of talked myself out of it as I was talking to her. So there are a few of my self-sabotaging behaviors, and have a look at what yours are. Be honest with yourself. It's not really a pretty task, but it's a really good one. It didn't take me too long to pick out like four or five ones that have genuinely impacted my life. So definitely have a look at yours. So Brianna goes on to say, self-sabotage is not always obvious at the onset. So if you look back at a hard time in your life, are there any self-sabotages you see now that you didn't see at the time? Because this isn't what she wrote, by the way, this is just my thoughts, but sometimes we don't realize until later. And for me, like, this is really evident now in like my weight whenever I was younger, like in my early 20s, very late teens, after spending a fortune on something. You know, sometimes I have self-sabotaged by spending loads of money on a really big course. Like, we're talking thousands here that I definitely didn't have, and it was like, right, I'll choose the pay monthly plan. And I did that more than once when I was younger, which is fucking crazy when I say it now, but I don't really regret it. I don't regret it at all, actually. I don't regret it at all. I've made peace with it, and I actually did get some good information out of it. But like, buying a big course, because I wasn't really content in studying computer science, so I was like, rather than face the actual problem, I'll just buy another course and do something that's still kind of techie and I could make money in. By the way, these courses aren't like university courses. One of them was about manifesting money, which I do not regret at all. Another one was it wasn't Boss Babes, but it was one of those ones, and Cassie and Shay, that were their names. And it's like an online digital marketing course, but in like 2017 2018 maybe, so kind of pre the social media that we have now. Like, it was way pre TikTok and stuff, and some people really ran with it, but I was mid uni and was using it as an avoidance technique, and at the time I thought it was great, but really that was just me sabotaging myself, because, well, I was spending money that I definitely didn't have to start with, and rather than facing the fact that I just didn't really want to do anything really like tech related, I was like, oh, this is a bit different, you know, I can do something with this and it's still kind of related to my degree, and maybe I could do this as my placement, because I don't want to face up to the fact that I don't want to go and work in like, I'm programming code for a living. And that avoidance is an act of self-sabotage as well. I also I'll read the next bit and then I'll say what I was going to say. Self-sabotage is a coping mechanism. Self-sabotage is what happens when we refuse to consciously meet our innermost needs, often because we do not believe we are capable of handling them. Sometimes we sabotage our relationships because what we really want to do is find ourselves, though we are afraid to be alone. Sometimes we sabotage our professional success because what we really want is to create art, even if it will make us seem less ambitious by society's measures. This, whenever I read that sentence, really hit home for me, because I was just like, is this what I did at uni? Is this what I did whenever I worked at Reno? You know, I was so smart in school. I really academically thrived in school. It was just my comfort zone. Like, my memory was really, really great. I understood everything. Things I didn't understand, I would still like remember the techniques and stuff, so I would be able to figure them out in exams and stuff. Until I got to A level, I would say, and everything kind of amped up a bit, and I didn't know what I wanted to do. And I always loved science, but I should have went with more creative pursuits. I don't like saying I should have done that, but in hindsight, if I was to give other people advice, I wouldn't say study what you think is going to get you a job, because it doesn't matter if you, unless you're going to do like dentistry or medicine or something, right? It doesn't really matter what you do at A level and then at university, because you'll get a job anyway. You know, you will get a job. There's no point. And this is what I would say to somebody else now, and maybe my younger self. Like, there's no point studying chemistry, maths, biology, and French if the only one that you're really passionate about is French and maybe maths, and you actually don't want to work with chemistry or biology or even maths in the future. So why did I choose to study them when I could have done French and Spanish, which I loved languages, would have made learning Italian so much easier. And I could have done music maybe as well, because I've always loved music and I got a nice star in my GCSE music. So I'm kind of like, why didn't I do them? And I know why I didn't do them, because I was told that they were like artsy-fartsy subjects and you shouldn't do that. And that was the message that was being fed to me by the school and by my parents, because they wanted what they thought was best for me, which is going down a really academic path, going to university, getting a good degree, and then getting a good job on the other side of it. And I did, like, I got a 2-1 on my computer, well, software engineering degree. I got a great job and it's opened up amazing opportunities for me. But circling back around to where I started, I did IT support for Renault F1 team, then Alpine F1 team for nearly 3 years, right? I did it for my placement and then I did it for nearly 2 years after. And I did my computer science degree, but then switched to software engineering in my final year for 5 years. I repeated a second year, so it should have been 4 years with the placement, but I ended up doing it for 5. I definitely, in hindsight, self-sabotaged myself because I didn't believe that I was capable of actually understanding programming, coding, anything outside of like networks and architecture and theoretical computer science, because it was really mathsy and I liked maths, right? But the more actual technical side of the degree, which was the programming, I told myself that like I couldn't do that, and therefore I actually couldn't do it until it literally got to the like final year and I was like, fuck, like I want to burst, so I need to study my ass off. And thankfully I did, and I got a 2-1. But I think if I had started that year with like, I want a 2-1, I probably would have got a 2-2. So I'm so glad I was like, I want to first, this is what I'm doing. But I had that mindset, because I did a degree that I didn't really want to do and I was kind of pushed into. And then at Renault, I was doing IT support and I just always felt like I wasn't good enough to be there, even though I had a fucking 2-1 in software engineering. But because I wasn't really into it, like I don't really care about computers. Like I forget most of my degree. I could probably remember it if I went back and studied and things, but I forget most of it. If you put a laptop down in front of me and ask me to point out like the different parts of it, even though I spent nearly 3 years of my life relatively recently dissecting them and putting them back together and working with routers and working with hard drives and working with computers and working with all these different specific softwares to Formula One and that team, even though I did that and I was good at it, I never actually felt that good at it because I really wanted to do a more creative side and therefore my heart just wasn't in it. And I feel like I just had this awakening whenever I was reading this in bed the other night, and I was like, shit, did I self-sabotage myself for years because I didn't let myself pursue anything creatively either, because I was like, oh, I need to focus on my career. And me doing something creative in my career was switching to marketing, which I'm really proud of myself to do, but again, it's not something I want to necessarily stay in forever. So do you have anything like that? You know, do you have anything that you look back on in hindsight and think, wow, I actually seriously self-sabotaged myself there? It's kind of bittersweet. Like, it's not, I don't look back with like sadness, but I look back and I'm like, that's bittersweet, because like younger Rebecca could have done so much better. She had to believe in herself in first and second year of uni. She would have got a first in uni, no problem. Like, I have no doubt I had the capability to get a first. I just talked myself out of understanding rather than into understanding until it got to crunch time. And I was like, right, I fucking have to understand this. Like, and that was when I really started using affirmations. And at university, in my final year, Claire McGuire, I don't know if you remember this, but I literally used to say to myself, walking to the library, I am funny, I am smart, I am kind, I am intelligent, I know what I'm doing, I'm getting a first, I understand Swift, I can program this. But, and I would go through like my big list of affirmations constantly in my head as if I was walking to and from my library and to and from a car. So that was when it kind of changed for me. But up until that point, definitely so much self-sabotage, basically from the moment I got 8A stars and 3A's in my GCSEs instead of 11A stars, the self-sabotage ended. Moving on. In the end, self-sabotage is very often just a maladaptive coping mechanism, a way we give ourselves what we need without having to actually address what that need is. We are merely numbing our desires and giving ourselves a little taste of temporary relief. Relief genuinely is only a temporary thing. Like, it does, as has happened to me at the kind of the last half of 2023, like, that sense of unfulfillment circles back around. Like, you cannot outrun it. It will come back to you. And I mentioned this in the previous episode as well. So glad I found the Artist Way, because it's really helping me feel more fulfilled. And because of that, or the fulfillment, I guess, is coming from the creative pursuits and the time that I'm giving to myself, spending time alone, doing my own creative thing outside of work and everything else, and just doing it for the sake of a creative outlet, which my like soul and personality needs. And if you sleep on that and push it aside and try not to think about it, then it's just going to come back and bite you in the ass in one way or another. Flipping the page. For most people, the abstract fear is really a representation of a legitimate fear. Because it would be too scary to actually dwell in the real fear, we project these feelings onto issues or circumstances that are less likely to occur. If the situation has an extremely low likelihood of becoming reality, it therefore becomes a safe thing to worry about, because subconsciously, we already know it isn't going to happen. Therefore, we have an avenue to express our feelings without actually endangering ourselves. So that is about the fact that self-sabotage comes from irrational fears. What, like, quote-unquote safe things are you worrying about at the minute? So the example that Brianna, the author, gives is, if you're someone who's deeply afraid of being a passenger in a car, maybe your real fear is a loss of control or the idea that someone or something else is controlling your life. Perhaps the fear is of moving forward, and the moving car is simply a representation of that. So what safe things are you worrying about, and what do you think is the actual cause of that worry? I had to think about this whenever I was going over this chapter earlier today and writing notes, and the only real example I could think of in that time was being a passenger in a car. Because I used to be fine with being a passenger in the car, I feel like, and now I'm a bit uneasy about it, and that's the example that she gives. So maybe I do have like a subconscious fear of moving forward, of like somebody else controlling my life. Actually, it would make sense, because I feel like the last couple of months I haven't really been in control of my life, and this has maybe happened in like the last year or so. I don't know if I have a fear of being a passenger. I think I'm just very judgy of other people's driving, and I think I'm a fantastic driver, but at the same time, that annoyance that I have and the irritation that I feel whenever somebody, like, I'm a passenger in somebody's car and they're maybe like not driving the way I would drive, and there is a slight fear around that where I'm like gripping the Jesus handles and stuff, which I hate, because I absolutely hate what my parents did to me. It could very well be a subconscious fear around not having any control of my life and somebody else having to control it for me. Interesting. Just had that awakening really there now, because I didn't properly process that earlier. If you try to fix a problem on the surface, you will always come up against a wall. This is because you're trying to rip off a band-aid before you have a strategy to heal the wound. Also, before I just speak about this next bit, the rain has just got really heavy and I'm sitting beside the window, but there's lots of windows in this flat, so no matter where I go, you're going to hear the rain, so apologies if you can hear it. The little software that I put it into before I publish this episode should drown out a lot of it, so I don't think you'll hear too much, but it has just got quite heavy. I'm going to read that bit again. So, if you try to fix the problem on the surface, you will always come up against a wall. This is because you're trying to rip off a band-aid before you have a strategy to heal the wound. When I read this, my first thought was, how many people move to Australia, because I'm Irish and everybody moves to Australia, trying to outrun the problems that they have in Ireland? Like the old boyfriends, the ex-girlfriends, the sense of no fulfillment, like getting a new job or a new house or a new boyfriend, moving countries, your problems are going to follow you to Australia. Your problems are going to follow you to the new job. The problems are going to follow you into a new relationship. If you don't actually confront the cause, and the legitimate cause, not the one that you think it like on the surface level is, until you actually confront that and deal with that, it's just going to follow you around and around. If you have anxiety in a relationship and it's followed you between every single relationship you've ever been in, you need to actually confront why you have anxiety and get clear on that. And don't live in denial about what it is, and help yourself through that so that you stop carrying that, because that's a burden to carry in itself. If you think that moving to Australia is going to solve all your problems, but whenever you're over there, you can't stop thinking about your ex, or maybe you forget him and then you come home because your visa runs out and you see him again and it's like, oh shit, my whole life is literally just crumbling again. I'm actually not over this guy. Like, you have to process the emotions that you're feeling. You can't just outrun them. You have to process the fear and face it head on. Self-sabotage comes from unconscious negative associations. Your life is defined not only by what you think about it, but also what you think of yourself. Your self-concept is an idea that you have spent your whole life building. It was created by piecing together inputs and influences from those around you. What your parents believed, what your peers thought, what became self-evident through personal experience, and so on. Your self-image is difficult to adjust because your brain's confirmation bias works to confirm your pre-existing beliefs about yourself. Confirmation bias is actually wild. Like, the things that we've convinced ourselves are true and are part of our identity because we only see the evidence to support that, because that's all we want to see. But once we start looking for evidence to support other beliefs that we want to have rather than the ones that we have held in the past, like, it's just crazy what comes up. We need to really work in what we are confirming in our bias, I guess. But whenever I read this, I started thinking about identity, right? So ask yourself, who are you? How did this version of you come to be? And what beliefs have built this version of you? What beliefs founded the you that you are today? Who do you want to be in comparison to who you are now? So in 6 months, 1 year, 5 years time, who do you want to be? And how is current you holding you back from being that person that you want to be? And finally, what is ideal you's belief? So the ideal version of you, what does she or he believe that current you just like can't seem to get behind? So for me, my self-concept at the minute, or in the past, because I am working on this, is that, let's take money. Okay, it's an easy example. Is that money is a finite resource that runs out, that you have to work really, really hard for. And this is not just my belief, this is a belief of billions of people across the globe. But there are also millions of people across the globe that believe that money gets to come to them really naturally, really easily, that it gets to be free-flowing, that is an infinite resource, because like these days we don't even hold money in our hands. Everything's like basically imaginary, like everything's on cards. It's a figure in your bank account that you don't even see. So it's just an energy, okay? This is a conversation for another day, but this is just like the example. I learned this in one of those courses I paid a fortune for a few years ago, but I do truly believe it. And I've never fully committed to doing the work to properly reprogram my subconscious to take on these new beliefs as my full beliefs. So for my future self, I want her to be really fucking wealthy. I want her to be... I never want money to be a reason that I have to say no to something or a reason to hold me back. So I look at what beliefs around money she would need to have. She would need to believe that it's an unlimited resource. She would need to believe that it's easy. She would need to believe that it comes here whenever she sleeps, and many other really positive money beliefs. And then I need to think about, well, what beliefs do I have now that are actually holding me back from thinking that? So I touched on them at the beginning a few minutes ago, that, you know, the only money I get is in my paycheck. So I only get it like my salary month to month. Like, where else am I gonna get money from if I work a full-time job? That whenever I spend money, it doesn't come back to me because it's going out of my bank account, but it's not gonna come back in. Ideal version of me, future me, she believes that as soon as I spend money, it comes right back into my bank account because it's an energy and it free flows, and where energy goes, energy flows. And it cannot be created or destroyed, so it just literally flows right back into my bank account. So these are the beliefs that I would look at actually wanting to have now. And I think that would be a really good exercise for you, like when you're reading this book, is actually look at what your current beliefs are and compare them to the beliefs of your future self, and start saying affirmations and scripting and visualizing and acting as that future self with those beliefs. And it's hard, it's not that easy to like try and convince yourself that everything you've known and everything you do know and believe about a certain subject is actually incorrect. or is actually maybe not incorrect, but let's say biased because of the confirmation bias. And you basically want to reprogram that confirmation bias to get where you want to go and stop self-sabotaging yourself and holding yourself back. I'm going to, I think, make a list of questions that I've thought of throughout this chapter and put it as a, maybe it's like a Google sheet or something. I'll link it in the bottom of this episode so that if you want to either just ask yourself these questions or, do you know, I could actually just put them in the description of the episode. So I'll do that. And I might do a Google sheet as well if anybody else wants that. But if you want to use them as journaling prompts, because they're really good. I've been like prompted myself as I've been thinking them and I feel very awakened. Not sure. Your anxiety around the issue that you're self-sabotaging is usually a reflection of your limiting belief. For example, you know, people will judge me. If that's like an anxiety that I have, the real underlying limiting belief is that I'm not good enough. And another example that Brianna gives is maybe you aren't really a pessimist, but you don't know how to connect with the people in your life other by complaining to them. And I thought this was really interesting because I have such a habit of complaining about the weather, and I actually don't mind whenever it's really rainy outside. It doesn't bother me. What time is it now? Oh shit, it's 5 to 7. I thought it was like 6 o'clock. Well, it's 6:55 and it's been dark for 2 hours. It is bucketing out of the heavens, as I said. And I'm in my pajamas. We were going to go to the gym and then we were like, no, we'll go in the morning instead. I'm in my pajamas. I was reading. I'm doing my podcast episode now. Then we're going to make nice meatballs for dinner and cuddle up and watch a movie. And that is like, I love nights like this. But why do I complain about the weather for the sake of complaining about the weather with other people who complain about the weather? It's just to make conversation when actually I don't mind the weather. It's like bitching about people with your childhood friends. Maybe you feel like you don't have much in common with your friends anymore. I don't think I came up with this example. I came up with it as in it's not in the book, but somebody I saw on Instagram or Pinterest or something ages ago and it always stuck with me. Like sometimes you feel like you don't have something in common with somebody that you knew from years ago. So all you do is like talk about other people with them. And it's like, is that really the foundation of a friendship that you want? You know, it's just, you're just bitching for the sake of bitching for something to do. And that's something to look at. So in order to reconcile this, you have to begin to challenge these pre-existing ideas and then adopt new ones. Once you begin to really question and observe these pre-existing limiting beliefs, you begin to see how warped and illogical they were all along, not to mention distinctly holding you back from your ultimate potential. Some more thoughts that I had around this. Questions and journaling prompts, homework, whatever you want to call it, to ask yourself. The book club questions. But what do you think your biggest limiting beliefs are? How do these manifest through self-sabotage in your life? And where do you think they came from? So for me, to have money would be, I actually wrote down an example. Okay, so having money, rich people, okay? They're greedy. Money is the root of all evil. I went to Catholic school, I was raised Catholic. I guess I still am a Catholic. Like, that is in the Bible. Money is the root of all evil. Definitely heard that in the homily a few times in a few gospels, you know? That rich people are really stingy, that rich people are really tight, that they only help themselves, that the rich get richer and the rich get poorer, the poor get poorer. These are all beliefs that were instilled in me as a child and a teenager and a young adult, a young adult, that I am reprogramming now to believe that actually people with money can still be good people. Like, the more money you have, the more good you can do in the world. That's just a fact of life. And that is a limiting belief that I have identified, and I've identified where it came from and how it manifests in my life is that I'm not a millionaire yet, really. And a few other ways as well, but genuinely have a look at what your limiting beliefs are, make a list of them, ask yourself how these manifest through self-sabotage. Maybe it's like a cycle of lack. Like, you get paid and then you run out of money and then you get paid. You get a big bonus, you still run out of money. You get paid again because you feel like you can't be a wealthy person because wealthy people are bad. Like, that's an example that is in all the wealth books. And then ask yourself where the beliefs came from. I don't know if I said that already. What is your biggest limiting belief, or what are your biggest limiting beliefs? How they manifest through self-sabotage, and where do they come from? Those are the three questions I would like you to ask yourself. So I'm thinking, I'm on page 17 now, and there are 27 pages, so 10 pages left. So I think what I'm going to do is end this chapter here, or end this part here, and then do like part three, which will be the second half of chapter one, just because it's already been half an hour and I know that I've already put in loads of questions for people to think about or journal on or just discuss. And so I'm going to end this episode here. I will follow up with part two in the coming days, either tomorrow, well, Friday when you listen to this, or over the weekend. And the same with, they'll probably just come like every second day considering the length of chapter two. You can tell this is my first time doing like a podcast book club, but I hope that you're enjoying it so far. I hope I'm making you think, because that's really what I want to do. And I hope that you are getting something from this so that we can all go on and live our best fucking lives in 2024 and beyond. That's it. So please leave a rating and review if you have not before, and share this podcast with anybody who you think would benefit from it. Continue reading the book, and I will be back very, very soon with part two of chapter one, or part three of the book club episodes, I guess. Bye.